Hello everyone, you're welcome to another exciting edition of Breakout with BD. My name is Bidemi Nelson and it's really going to be a great show today. Last week we were looking at the relationship between spousal abuse and child abuse. We were unable to finish that, but we will continue in that stride this week. We were checking out stuff about emotional abuse and we really wanted to know what it was really about and how damaging it is to its victims. I'm sure you had a lot of stuff you made changes towards last week. I hope you continue to make those positive changes because that's what we need to make our world a safer place, to make the world a safer place for our children, and to make the world a better place. You're welcome once again to Breakout with BD. I'm so excited to have you on the show. Like I told you last week, we have three new exciting segments on the show now. We have News and Breakout, where we have news and gist majorly from Africa and every other part of the world. We also have On the Job Again, which is for people who are on the job and those who are out of job, probably as a result of the ugly recession that hit not so long ago, but who really want to come back, you know, and get things moving on again and be able to, you know, get food on the table and have good money in the pockets. On the Job Again is the most exciting segment. You really, really don't want to miss that. And now we have Angels on a Mission, where we celebrate people who are doing one special thing to help one another or to help their brothers or sisters in the world today, and especially to make the world a better place for one child out there. I tell you, Breakout with BD is your show. We are here to make you smile. We're here to empower you. We're here to inform you. And we're here to make the world a better place for you, for me, for all the children out there. I'll be right back after this short break. Don't you go anywhere. Welcome to Breakout with BD. This is your show. We're here to make you smile. We're here to make the world a better place for you. And we're going to be hitting it off with emotional abuse. What exactly do we call emotional abuse when we're looking at domestic violence and spousal abuse? Now, when people think of domestic abuse, they often picture battered women who have been physically assaulted. But not all abusive relationships involve violence. Just because you are not battered and bruised doesn't mean you are not being abused. Many men and women suffer from emotional abuse, which is no less destructive, unfortunately. Emotional abuse is often minimized or overlooked, even by the person being abused. Let's get to understand more about emotional abuse. The aim of emotional abuse is to chip away at your feelings of self-worth and independence. If you're a victim of emotional abuse, you may feel that there is no way out of that relationship or that without your abusive partner, you have nothing. How true can that be? It's not true. It's never true. Emotional abuse often includes verbal abuse, such as yelling, name-calling, blaming, and shaming, isolation, intimidation, and controlling behavior. And all of these fall under emotional abuse. So if you're in a relationship where there's a lot of taunting, abusive use of abusive words, There's a lot of blaming. There's a lot of shaming, making someone feel unwanted, making somebody feel useless, making somebody feel rejected. And also when you have cases of isolation, where you try and break off this victim's relationship with friends and family, and you try and intimidate them to keep that control and try and control their behavior, then we're looking at a very severe case of emotional abuse. And as you know, we're talking about the relationship between spousal abuse and child abuse, and we're focusing a lot on what exactly makes up spousal abuse. And emotional abuse is one vital area through which spousal abuse exhibits itself. Now, sometimes abusers who use emotional or psychological abuse often throw in threats of physical violence or other repercussions if you don't do what they want you to do. So we also have, alongside the other things I mentioned, we also have a lot of threats and, you know, even the execution of those threats to get you to do what they want you to do. Like I told you last week, the main purpose of spousal abuse is to get absolute and total control over the other party and to get them to do what that abusive partner wants them to do. Now, as a victim, you may think that physical abuse is far worse than emotional abuse, because physical abuse can send you to the hospital and leave you with scars. But I tell you, the scars of emotional abuse are very, very, very real. And they sure do run very deep too. In fact, emotional abuse can be just as damaging as physical abuse, sometimes even worse. So this is a very, very severe case of spousal abuse, and when you try and use the emotions to take charge, to get control, to gain control over your partner, I think that's very wicked. I think that's just totally unacceptable. And like I said, spousal abuse must stop. We all must rise up and look it straight in the face and do what we have to do to nip it in the bud. Now, apart from emotional abuse, we also have some other forms of abuse. We'll look at the economic or financial abuse. Now, this is a subtle form of emotional abuse. And because it's so subtle, people might actually overlook it or probably not notice that spouse is actually being violated or abused, because the abuser is using an economic or financial means. Like I said, an abuser's goal is to control you. And he or she will frequently use money if he needs to do that. Economic and financial abuse includes rigidly controlling your finances, where you don't get to make decisions about how you spend your own money. This is your money, but you can't make decisions as to how you spend it or what you're going to use your own money for. Other ways include withholding money or credit cards. So you actually have money, but you don't have access to it because your abusive partner has withdrawn that money or your credit cards from you to take away your bargaining power, and you don't get access to make purchases or make financial decisions as the need arises. We also look at making you account for every penny you spend. We have some abusive partners that they allow you actually, they allow you hold the money. They allow you, you know, make decisions as to how you spend the money. But you must give an account of every penny that you spend of your own money or the money that they give to you. And that is very abusive. And some people don't know that. Other forms of economic or financial abuse includes withholding basic necessities such as food, clothes, medications, shelter. It could go on and on. So when you have a spouse who is withholding things like food, doesn't allow you as his partner, you know, to get access to food. It doesn't allow you to get access to clothes because you don't have the money to buy it. You don't have access to medication or health and care because you don't have the money to pay for it. You don't have access to shelter. You can't probably pay for a roof over your own head. This is a very severe case of economic abuse. Other forms include restricting you to an allowance. So here it's a form of a quota that is placed on the amount of money that is made available to you at any point in time. So, and he restricts you to that allowance. So he or she restricts you to that allowance. So you can't go beyond it. That's living hell, in my opinion. We also have other ways through which economic and financial abuse is perpetrated, and other ways include preventing you from working or choosing your own career. I've seen instances of especially in Africa, where I am, with the celebration of patriarchy and the over estimation of the male gender over the female gender. You get some men who put their foot down and say, if you marry to me, I'm not going to allow you work because I'm your husband and I make the decisions. So you can work as long as you're married to me. You're going to be a housewife. You're just going to take care of the home and maybe take care of me in bed and all of that, you know. And so they sabotage that person from working, from even making a career. So what happens when you take the means of livelihood from a woman or a man, as the case may be? You're practically ruining that person. You're practically ruining his means to provide for himself and his or her children. They also could sabotage your job. Now, in this case, you probably have a job where you earn a living, but they could make you miss work, or they could call you constantly while you're at work to distract you, or they could make you go late to work. So they sabotage your job, and the essence is to make you lose that job, lose your livelihood, and then you come crawling and depending on them exclusively to earn a living. And then they could go as far as stealing from you or taking your money, and this is really a depraved means of abusing someone in an economic or financial way. So some of these spouses could descend so low as to steal your money or take your money from you. If you are in this situation, you are actually being abused. You need to get out of it. You need to call it quits. Honestly, it's not worth staying in that kind of relationship. All right, let's check out violent and abusive behavior. Is it really the abuser's choice? You know, there's a lot of stuff in this world, and somebody talks about actions and consequences, and that's really what guides everything we do in the world today. For every action we take, there's always a consequence. And for every action we take, we make a decision to take that action. We decide to take that action. Now, when it comes to abusing your spouse or being violent with your spouse, is it the choice of the abuser? Or when it comes to being abusive and violent with your partner in a relationship, an intimate relationship, is it the choice of the abuser? And I would say yes, it is. Because despite what many people believe, domestic violence and abuse is not due to the abuser's loss of control over his or her behavior. In fact, abusive behavior and violence is very deliberate and is a choice that is made by the abuser in order to control you. So this is a calculated step. It's a calculated movement to subdue you, to get you under his grips continually, to make you stay under his, or to make you stand under his beck and call. So remember, if you are being abused by somebody in an intimate relationship that you are in or that you have been into for some time, it's not because your partner has issues such as managing his anger, or he has issues with probably he had a bad day at work, or all of that. It's a deliberate and calculated move, step by that partner to control you and take away your life, and you need to stop it. You need to help yourself first by getting out of that relationship. Okay, that said, you need to know that abusers use a variety of tactics to manipulate and exert their power. We talked about a couple of them last week, so we'll just have a short talk on some of those things that they do. The weapons in their arsenal that they use to manipulate and exert their powers over their victims. And let's take a look at dominance, for instance. Now, when you have an abusive individual who needs to feel in charge of a relationship, they will make decisions for you and the family. They will tell you what to do, and they will expect you to obey without question. Your abuser may treat you like a child, like a servant, or even as his or her possession. So we are looking at a very disturbing trend of dominance here, where these people just want you to become a robot that they can manipulate, press a button, do this, do that, no questions asked. Just take charge of your life for you. It's a disturbing trend often used by abusive partners in a relationship in order to perpetuate spousal abuse or domestic violence. Another thing they do is humiliate their partner. They use humiliation. An abuser will do everything he or she can to make you feel bad about yourself or defective in some way. After all, if you believe you're worthless and no one else would ever want you, you're less likely to leave that abusive relationship. So insults, name calling, shaming, and public put downs are all weapons of abuse designed to erode you of your very, very crucial self-esteem and to make you feel powerless. So abusive partners would use humiliation just to take away your individuality, take away your self-worth, take away what makes you tick, so that you will remain in that abusive relationship and you will remain despondent, you will remain despaired, and you will remain helpless. If you are in this kind of relationship, now you know, please check out of it. It's not worth any more time from you. Let's look at the third weapon they use, and that's isolation. Now, with isolation comes a lot of restricting your relationship with the people that you should relate with. And they do this in order to increase your dependence on that abusive partner, be it a man or a woman. An abusive partner will cut you off entirely from the outside world. He's going to isolate you entirely from the outside world. He or she may keep you from seeing your family, your friends, or even prevent you from going to work or school. You may have to ask for permission to do anything, to go anywhere, or to see anyone. Oh God, it's terrible. Living this kind of life is terrible. You need to get out of it and get out of it fast. Isolation is terrible. The world is beautiful. Friends and family are there for you to enjoy the world. Don't remain in an abusive relationship. Let's check the fourth weapon used by abusive partners, and that is the weapon of threat. Abusers will commonly use threats to keep their partners from leaving or to scare them into dropping charges. Your abuser may threaten to hurt or kill you, your children, other family members, or even your pets. he or she may also threaten to commit suicide, file false charges against you, or report you to child services. But you can see this, the vicious cycle of the threats that they use. But they don't want you to leave them, and they don't want you to report to the police. They don't want you to report to the necessary authorities and get help. So they threaten to hurt or even take your life, your children's lives, your family members' lives, even those of your pets. How depraved can a mind of an abuser get? You know, I can't comprehend it. And it's just to keep you in that relationship and to prevent you from talking about it to somebody else. But you need to do something about it. You cannot continue in an abusive relationship. We all need to do what is right and get out of it for our sake and for the sake of the people we love the most, especially for our children's sake. The next weapon they use is the weapon of intimidation, where your abuser would use a variety of tactics designed to scare you into submission. Well, that's the essence of intimidation in the first place. It's just to get you to submit to his will. And such tactics may include threatening looks or gestures, smashing things in front of you, destroying property, hurting your pets, or putting weapons on display. Sometimes weapons like guns, knives, you know. The clear message is, if you don't obey, there will be a violent consequence. Now, with this form of behavior, you really, really need to, you know, you need to watch it. You have to be wise about your approach in getting help. But no matter the level of intimidation, you must get out of an abusive relationship. The police is always there to help you. Now let's look at one of the weapons also that they use, and we'll be stopping there for the meantime. They also use the weapon of denial and blame. And the sad thing is, abusers are very, very good at making excuses for the inexcusable things that they do. They will often blame their abusive and violent behavior on a very bad childhood, on a bad day. And sometimes they blame the victims for abusing them. It's just unthinkable. And these abusive partners may minimize the abuse or deny that it occurred. So that these are just ways of intimidating and ways of getting the person to believe that it's your fault if you are being abused. So if you have good behavior today, they may minimize their abuse. And sometimes when that abuse has happened, they might tell you, I did not abuse you. I never hit you. You know, you might begin to think, am I okay? You might begin to think, am I sound upstairs or something? But these are just tactics to keep you in that relationship. So they use denial and blame. Now, such abusive partners will commonly shift the responsibility of their actions onto the victims. And somehow, his or her violent and abusive behavior, they make you believe that it's your fault. But my dear, it's really, really not your fault. It's time for you to wake up. It's time for you to step out and step into taking charge of your life again. The time is today. The time is right now. I'll be back after this break. Don't go anywhere. Welcome to Breakout with BD. I'm excited to have you back on the show. We just checked out some of the arsenals used by abusers in abusive relationships, some of the things they use to keep their victims in the relationship or prevent their victims from seeking the needed help, and also the things they use to make their victims feel worthless, helpless, and very, very vulnerable. Now, I'm sure many victims of abuse or victims of past victims or ex-victims, if I may use that, of abuse would like to know the composition of their abusers. What exactly makes someone an abusive spouse? So let's check it out. How do you know your partner is an abusive one? We'll start by looking at some of the traits that these abusive spouses or partners may have. And the first one is that abusive partners usually will pick and choose whom to abuse. They don't insult, threaten, or assault everyone in their life who give them grief. Usually, they save their abuse for the people closest to them, the very ones they claim to love. So these are people that actually make a decision as to whom they're going to abuse and then follow through with that decision. So they actually, it's not just you who probably is giving them a bad day. Many other people also give them a bad day or make them feel terrible, cause them grief. But because they have selected who they would abuse, who the target of their abuse would be, it makes all the blame fall back on that victim. And that's why it's really terrible for somebody to continue in a relationship, because you suffer for your sins and also the sins, the very many sins of other people. Now, the second trait they have is abusers carefully choose when and where to abuse their victims. Now, they control themselves until no one else is around to see their abusive behavior. They may act like everything is fine in the public, but lash out instantly as soon as you are alone. So this is also very disturbing, and it's very scary to me, because you know we claim to love ourselves, and you don't know what to expect in the next minute. You have a very polite, gentle, loving man or woman in the public, and the minute you step in indoors and you shut the door behind you, you're looking at a monster. Ah, it's scary, honestly. Now the next trait is that abusers are able to stop their abusive behavior when it benefits them. Now, most abusers are not out of control. That's the truth. In fact, they are able to immediately stop their abusive behavior when it's to their advantage to do so. For example, when the police shows up or when probably their boss calls from the office. So they stop that behavior. They put on the polite demeanor, the polite character that they want people outside to believe that this is who they are. And, you know, as long as they're able to keep up with their appearances in the public, that's okay. But the victim takes all the brunt in the home. So that's also very disturbing too. And then the last thing is that violent abusers usually direct their blows where they won't show. And this is really, really scary, honestly. And the thing is, rather than acting out in a mindless rage, many of these abusers would physically and violently abuse their victims by carefully aiming their kicks and punches where those bruises and marks would not show. Now, how do you get somebody to actually see that you're being abused, you know, when the person who is abusing you at home is probably hitting you in areas that nobody's going to see? Your thighs, your upper arms, which would be covered, your chest, your back, you know, nobody's going to see that. They probably would believe everything is fine. But this is what violent abusers especially, this is what they do. So they know where to aim their punches and their kicks at, and nobody ever suspects that there's actually abuse going on in their home. Okay then, Let's check out the cycle of violence and domestic abuse. Last week I told you that domestic abuse is a wide topic, but where it now, you know, moves into physical assault, then we now call it domestic violence. Now, let's check out the cycle of violence within domestic abuse. The usual thing is that there's this common pattern that domestic abuse would usually fall into, and it starts with abuse first. Now, here we have your abusive partner lashing out with aggressive, belittling, or violent behavior. The abuse is a power play designed to show you who is the boss. So it starts with that kind of abuse, you know, with aggressive, belittling, or violent behavior. And then from abuse, we move to guilt. And after abusing you, your partner feels guilty, and he's not really feeling guilty over what he's done. He's more worried about the possibility of being caught and facing the consequences for his abusive behavior. So you understand why he's feeling guilty. So we have him, he initiates the abuse, and then he begins to display guilt. And then comes the third cycle, which is the excuses cycle. Now your abuser is able to rationalize what he or she has done, and he then would come up with a string of excuses or probably even blame you for the abusive behavior. Anything, he will do anything to avoid taking responsibility for what he has done to you. So that's the next cycle, excuses. He will do anything to avoid taking responsibility for hurting you, taking responsibility for taking your life away from you. And then the next cycle is the normal behavior. Now here the abuser will do everything he can to regain control and keep that victim in the relationship. He may even act as though nothing happened, or he may turn on the charm, you know, the peaceful honeymoon face, which may give the victim hope that the abuser has really changed this time. And after that, there comes the fantasy and the planning stage, where your abuser begins to fantasize about abusing you again. He spends a lot of time thinking about what you've done wrong and how he will make you pay. You know, this is somebody that says he loves you, and this is somebody you also love. It's disturbing, honestly. And after he fantasizes about all you have done, after he thinks about all the wrongs you have done and how he will make you pay, then he makes a plan for turning that fantasy of abuse into reality. And there comes the unleashing of hell right there in your very special relationship. And the final stage is the setup stage. Now, your abuser might set you up and put his plan in motion. Now, he does this basically to create a situation where he can justify abusing you. So he would probably create situations for you to, you know, do the things that will trigger his rage or trigger his violent behavior to you at a particular point. So it's all about setting you up, you know, and that's the worst part, because after the setup stage comes the abuse, the violence itself, and it's terrible. Now your abuser's apologies and loving gestures in between the episodes of abuse can make it really difficult to leave, you know. He may make you believe that you're the only one who can help him, and that things will turn around and maybe get different, you know, later on. And even make you believe that he truly loves you. But we can see it in the open. Is there love where there is violence, where there is abuse, and where the abuse and violence is a calculated measure, where it's something that is done deliberately to hurt you, you know? Now, whether you believe it or not, the dangers of staying in an abusive relationship is very, very real. So I keep saying it, you need to step out. You need to get out of that relationship. No matter what you need to do, you need to do it and get out of that relationship. It's not worth staying in it. All right, there's this example that the Mid Valley Women's Crisis Service gave. And they just tried to depict the full cycle of domestic violence. And they start by saying that a man abuses his partner. After he hits her, he experiences self-directed guilt. He says, "I'm sorry for hurting you." What he does not say is, "Because I might get caught." So he says he's sorry for hurting you, but he doesn't say he's sorry because he doesn't want to get caught. Now, he then rationalizes his behavior by saying that his partner is having an affair with someone else. He tells her, "If you're wearing such a worthless whore, I wouldn't have to hit you." He then acts contrite, reassuring her that he will never hurt her again. He thereafter fantasizes and reflects on past abuse and how he would hurt her again. He plans on telling her to go to the store to get some groceries. What he withholds from her is that she has a certain amount of time to do the shopping. Now, when she's held up in traffic and is a few minutes late, he feels completely justified in assaulting her because she is, according to the abusive partner, having an affair with the store clerk. Now, that is the setup I talked about. He practically just set her up, and that's the worst part of the abusive cycle. Now, we need to really, really focus on recognizing the warning signs of domestic violence and abuse. And it's impossible to know what certainly goes on behind closed doors because, you know, we're not invincible, you know. But there are many telltale signs and symptoms of emotional abuse and domestic violence. So if you witness any of these warning signs of abuse in a friend, a family member, a co-worker, you know, please take them very seriously. So these are some of the general warning signs of domestic abuse. Now, people who are being abused may seem afraid or anxious to please their partners. Sometimes they go along with everything their partner says or does. Then they might check in often with their partner to report where they are or what they are doing, you know, just so that the partner has an update on their activities 24/7. They also may receive frequent harassing phone calls from their partners. And then they may talk about their partner's temper, jealousy, or possessiveness. So when you see people who do these five things, they are most likely, they are most likely in an abusive relationship. So we need to really do something about being our brother's keeper. We need to look at these signs and help them get help, because sometimes it's difficult getting out of an abusive relationship. Now, what are some of the warning signs of physical violence? Now, some of such signs include these people might have frequent injuries with the excuse of accidents. So you have somebody with injuries, probably a broken limb or bruises and all of that, and he keeps telling you, "Oh, he had an accident, he fell off the staircase, probably he had an accident in the kitchen or something." Other times, he frequently might miss work or school or social occasions without explanation. Then sometimes he might dress in clothing designed to hide bruises or scars. So they might sometimes wear long sleeves in summer or sunglasses indoors. You need to check it out too. Yeah, these are signs of abuse. Now, there are also signs of isolation and the psychological signs of abuse as well. So let's just check out the signs of isolation. The people who have been isolated might show you some of these signs, which includes they might be restricted from seeing their family and friends. They may rarely go out in public without their partner, and they might have limited access to money, credit cards, or even their car. Then for the psychological warning signs of abuse, we have people who have very, very low self-esteem, even if they used to be confident in the past. Sometimes they might show major personality changes. Sometimes it might even involve an outgoing person suddenly becoming withdrawn. And then they might be depressed, anxious, or suicidal, you know, These are some of the disturbing psychological signs of abuse. Now, let's check out how domestic violence affects children. We talked about this sometimes when we looked at the child sex trade. Now, let's look at it again. You know, what's the relationship between domestic violence and child abuse? And the thing is, domestic violence often includes child abuse, whether you believe it or not, because children most likely will be victimized or threatened as a way of punishing or controlling the adult victim of domestic violence. Sometimes they might even be injured, although that it may be unintentional, but this could happen when acts of violence occur in their presence. Often, episodes of domestic violence expand to include attacks on children. However, even when children are not directly attacked, they can experience serious emotional damage as a result of living with a violent household. Disturbingly, children living in this environment come to believe that this behavior is acceptable. So with domestic violence comes the grooming process, you know, because it helps you believe, it helps you form a conclusion about life. So when you have children who see violence regularly, they believe it's normal to show love or to relate to other people by being violent with them. And that's really, really disturbing. Now, domestic violence and child abuse is really, really very, very common. And it also has very long-term consequences to the victim and all the family members. Even it has a long-term consequence to the abuser as well. Recent surveys indicate that increased public awareness about domestic violence, along with more understanding attitude towards victims, have encouraged women to come forward. In a survey conducted in some time past now, around early 1995, 31% of women said they had personally faced abuse, while in a similar survey conducted in July 1994, only 24% said they had been abused. Now, the sad thing is, child abuse on this part has become a national epidemic. More than 1 million children are confirmed each year as victims of child abuse and neglect by state departments of child protective services, and every day a minimum of 3 children die as a result. Violence in the home has been listed as a major factor contributing to the growth of reports of child abuse and neglect. This is really disturbing. Now, are there similarities between families involved in domestic violence and families involved in child abuse? The answer is a big yes, because neither child abuse nor domestic violence is a phenomenon of the 20th century. Children who have been physically traumatized or deprived of the necessities of life and molested sexually by adults since the dawn of human history have had problems of child abuse as they move through life. Traditionally, parents claim ownership of their children, and society hesitated to interfere with family units. But thank God some of these things have changed. We now have some people in intimate relationships, as well as those who abuse children, often repeating learned behaviors transmitted intergenerationally. I said sometimes in one of the shows I said abuse begets, yes, I remember, corporal punishment. I said abuse begets abuse. So I'm not going to talk about corporal punishment, but you know, something I mentioned in that talk, but when you constantly use violence to discipline your children will most likely use violence to discipline their own children. So it's a vicious continuation of abuse. Oh. Domestic violence and child abuse may differ in some significant ways, but they work hand in hand. They help each other. Now, how do we prevent these problems? Before I talk about how we prevent these problems, I want you to know that the majority of perpetrators of domestic violence are men, but that does not exonerate the women. So anybody can actually perpetrate domestic violence. And like I said, wherever you have domestic violence, the children are not safe. How can we prevent these problems? Now, domestic violence and child abuse proliferate in environments that accept the lesser status of women and children. You know, I talked about patriarchy, where you over-celebrate the gender of the men. And then when you have children who are treated as, you know, very minor individuals, they probably don't have rights, then, you know, when you abuse them, it's really not a big deal in some people's opinion, but that's wrong. When you shroud violence in secrecy, it allows this disturbing behavior to continue. So when you try and celebrate patriarchy and you know, you neglect the rights of children, and then you go ahead to keep this thing secret, the abusive pattern will continue. I talked about Zumalo last week. He was a guy in Swaziland who had sex with his 9-year-old child and did it continually for years until she became the mother of his child when she was 13. We need to talk about this. We need to speak up. And that's the essence of this show. We want victims of abuse to speak out and get help. The other things we can do to prevent these very ugly things, we can educate ourselves. We can involve our communities through multidisciplinary approach to provide intervention and prevention services to families in need. We should also try and educate the entire public, whether you have domestic violence going on in your home or not, about the ugly trend of domestic violence, the reality, and also the correlation with child abuse and the long-term cost to the victims, the abuser, the children, and the society itself. We can also provide access to self-help groups. Now, this is very common in advanced countries, although not so common in Africa, where I am. So, if you have this kind of groups around you, you need to leverage on them. Go there, get the needed support. You'll meet people who have experienced some of these things. You can share your stories together, and you know you can lean on one another, and it does help really. And then you can also educate people who work with children and families, including teachers, service providers, and healthcare professionals, about the interplay between domestic violence and child abuse. So these are some of the things that we can do to help check the issue and the disturbing trend of domestic violence, and also inadvertently we're also checking the proliferation of child abuse. I hope you had I hope your heart was touched, and I hope you were able to finally make up your mind as to stop, you know, keeping silent about staying in an abusive situation if you are in an abusive situation. And I hope those of us who aren't in abusive situations are really going to stand up and begin to look after our neighbors and be our brothers' keepers. You know, for the world to be a better place, we need to take care of one another. We need to be good to one another. And being good to one another starts by showing concern for one another. That's all we have on this segment of the relationship between spousal abuse and child abuse. I'll be right back after this short break. We'll be moving on to news and breakouts. Don't go anywhere. I'll be right back after this short break. Welcome to Breakout with BD. Now we're on a new and exciting segment, and that is news on Breakout. So we'll just run through it quickly, some of the gist we have, especially those in Africa. We'll start with the giant of Africa, which is Nigeria, the most populous nation in the whole of Africa. And with that, we'll hit it off by saying that the just concluded presidential polls in Nigeria, which saw the candidates of the ruling PDP, People's Democratic Party, and the incumbent president, Goodluck Jonathan, winning the elections, eventually was the results was released in the week. Now, international observers, which included the Commonwealth and the European Union, the EU, commended the election process. However, post-election violence have rocked the northern parts of the country. The violence rocked states such as Adamawa, Bauchi, Kano, Kaduna, Katsina, Borno, Sokoto, Plateau, among others. And these states have witnessed major destructions of lives and properties that included the residential buildings of the now incumbent Vice President Nnamdi Sambo, even the Emir of Kano, and some campaign offices. As a result of this, a curfew has been imposed in the affected areas, with numerous arrests being made by the police. Now, the gubernatorial polls are supposed to take place on the 26th, which is Tuesday of this month, but it has been shifted to the 28th of April in Kaduna and Bauchi. And to make matters worse, a bomb blast occurred in Kaduna this Thursday while Muslims were preparing for their evening prayers. And this is after the skirmishes, violence, and arsons that have rocked the state. Another sad thing is that fire ravaged the Okwebi home of pastor turned Tunde Bakare, who is the running mate of the opposition party CPC candidate Muhammadu Buhari. Although the fire was stopped, a part of the building and several valuables were lost to the fire. And the UN has planned to probe the post-election riots in Nigeria through the International Criminal Court. I think that's a laudable step by the UN. And then we move to Libya. According to the BBC News, Misrata is still a city under siege. Libyan rebels in Misrata say forces loyal to Colonel Gaddafi have carried out heavy bombardment of the city center and three residential areas. Now, that's the gist we have on for our segment, News on Breakout. If you need to know what's happening in Africa, you can contact me and I will be glad to oblige you. I'll let you know exactly what is happening around Africa and also around the world. Now, let's move to our next segment, which we call On the Job Again. And I just love this segment because, like I said, it's for you, whether you're in the job or you're out of job. It's just to ensure that you're at the best at what you do. And if you're out of job, it's to ensure you have laudable business ideas to earn living, to earn a living for yourself. And today we'll look at the women joining the ranks of entrepreneurs. And we're going to be checking a story, a very interesting story of Janelle King. Now, when jobs in her area began to disappear, Janelle King knew the time had come for her to try something a little different. Now, according to SD Metro, she began to dream of entrepreneurial opportunities. She envisioned how her drawings could bring mere words to life. Now, Janelle is an artist. She draws. Now, through a new career as a graphic recorder and meeting facilitator, she started a career or a new job for herself. Now, as owner of Big Picture Solution, Kings makes a profitable living. And she never really imagined herself as a business owner, but was inspired to do so through other women who have already made it on their own. And she has worked for more than 20 years in the non-profit managerial sector. And while a merger caused the loss of her position, she explored ways to tap into her natural talent and passion for visual expression. And in the process, she discovered the niche industry of which she is now a part and helps lead as a board member of the International Forum of Visual Practitioners. Her job as the owner of Big Picture Solutions is to help facilitate meetings through graphic illustration that capture collective knowledge, vision, and goals. King's vision for her own company doubles as the title of a talk she gives at seminars for other women entrepreneurs. And the good thing is that if King's did it, you can too. Entrepreneurship is all about loving what you do and being able to do it so well. I was so touched by her story. I believe many people can make that needed change today. We can't just sit back and wait for things to happen. We need to stand up and make that needed change and make the world a better place for ourselves and for our children. Our other segment, Angels on a Mission, will still be celebrating the family of Maria Castroba that we celebrated last week for that endowment fund they set up for women who are victims of domestic violence, and using the endowment fund as a way of reaching out to these women to ensure that they have the best quality of life, to ensure that education, particularly, that their education continues, and that the future of their children is not mortgaged as a result of domestic violence. Wow, it's been an exciting ride with all of you today. I tell you, I just love being on air every Sunday because I know you are here because of me and I'm here because of you. And I really want to thank you for listening in. Those of you that contacted me in the week, it was fun reading from you. I hope to get more text messages. I hope to get more emails. I really, really would like to know your feel about this show. And I'm working assiduously to make sure that you get the quality and the best radio time in the world. Thank you for listening in. I do love you. Be good to one another. I'll catch you next week. Bye-bye.